RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Dark to Light podcast with...
Oh, damn. It's just Frank today. Frank and Beans.
Frank and Beans.
I'm caught between things today. I woke up excited, woke up intrigued. I'm a little bit on the fence right now. We just finished watching the... Well, I guess right now the question and answer portion of that national emergency declaration is still ongoing, but there's a lot to be spoken about.
Yeah, there is. We were both kind of chatting together and with a couple other people during this thing. And, you know, listen, just to tell everybody out there, it's fresh right now for us. It's literally, what time? 11:30 in the morning, even though the show goes out at 5 p.m. He's in the middle of, he just screamed down the reporter after Jim Acosta, rightfully so, which we'll talk about in a minute. And right before that, you and I were in agreement. I at least was super, super duper uncomfortable throughout this conference. Like, I was like, ooh, my husband walked in. I'm like, tell him to be quiet. Just stop it. Stop talking. Don't. Yeah.
Let me just put a disclaimer out there, because I think that you and I might be on the same page with this, Tracy. But I believe in the National Security Declaration. I believe in border security, especially with the kind of reality that we're facing, the state of our government and the welfare state and everything that's going on here. I know what we're up against as far as the opposition with inside the ranks of our own government. I know that this is a split personality, schizophrenic situation that we're dealing with and trying to untangle here. I am no way walking back my support of the president.
Agreed. I have to agree with everything you just said and then like add an exclamation point to it. But if we can't have this honest conversation, Frank, where are we?
We're just cheerleaders then. But I have to say is that that address should have been 5 minutes long. In, out, clean. It just came. It was so uncomfortable for me. It was a rambling mess.
A couple of things off the bat. Number one, he's obviously very angry. Yep. I like that. I think that when Donald Trump is angry about things that are not getting accomplished, he goes the extra mile and really sticks it to him, in my opinion. And I think we need that passion and that fire. You know, at the end of the day, this is the security of our country. This is not a joke. This is not some little issue that we're dealing with here. But I got to be honest, like the thing that made my stomach crawl or my skin crawl and my stomach turn was when he started talking about China and how they deal with their drug problem. And he basically was saying in not so many words that if we wanted to get rid of our drug problem, we could copycat what China does and implement the death penalty. Contrast it against the criminal justice reform bill that was just signed. That doesn't square.
Yeah, even if it was he wasn't even insinuating he wanted that here, the fact that he sounded so giddy about it happening in China, it just sounded weird. Like I said, everybody, this is completely about optics and about the functionality of the declaration today. In fact, he spent a very, very small, minuscule amount of time on the actual national security the national security declaration, the emergency declaration. Everything was just – it almost felt like he was trying to beat around the bush and fluff it. You know, I don't know. Either way, I'm happy that this is moving forward. But did he mention anything about this spending bill, though?
No, he did not mention a thing about the fact that he was even going to sign it.
See, that's the other thing I'm wondering, because Gateway Pundit and a few other people have picked up on a couple of the sections and clauses inside of this bill that seem pretty worrisome, especially when it comes to the border wall and you know, these little loopholes for people to claim some kind of political asylum or protection by being guardians or projected guardians of minors and stuff. I don't know. We got to see what's going on, but he didn't even talk about it.
No, he didn't. And it's interesting to me. It was almost like he didn't even I just want to see what's up his sleeve. I know there's more than meets the eye here. We'll put it that way. And listen, my computer was updating, so we were listening to the question and answer portion afterwards, where he was on fire. Like, when he's interacting like that and he's not kind of like going off script, kind of improvising, talking a lot about trade and things like that, that's all fine and good and everything. But like he's very direct with reporters, and you know, they're basically challenging him on whether or not there's a crisis at the border at all. And he's just like, you know, all he should say is one death at the border is too many. That's a crisis for me. That's it.
Yeah.
Shut it down.
One death at the border is too many. When we have gunfights at the border, it's too many. I don't get, you know, here's the thing for me. You would think that these imbeciles in the so-called press who are twisting themselves into pretzels in order to downplay what is happening at the border in a number of ways. Forget about it's not even just drugs and gun running. Many of the time it's being done with the help of our own government. But there's also just the humanitarian side of this. Why the hell do people in this country who pretend to be so overcome with grief for minors and people who are coming great distances on foot and suffering atrocities along the way, why are they concerned more so about making sure there is aid for these people once they get here, once they make that abusive trek, than it is to make sure that these people are dissuaded from coming and sustaining the abuse to get here? And the thing that gets me more so is that you would think that from the way that they do twist themselves into pretzels, like Jim Acosta and that other idiot that always follows up with him, and they start putting out their own, well, listen, we have our statistics that show us that this is the safest the border has been in years, and crime is down, and this is not really happening, and you're bringing up some false emergency to fulfill some kind of a campaign promise. You would think that these people are anarcho-capitalists and strict libertarians, where they say they're opposed to a wall and they're opposed to border security on the foundation that it'll all work itself out because we don't have anything on the inside. It should filter itself out. We don't have a big welfare state. We don't have things that are waiting to absorb people and bust them around. We don't have a large group of people that are inside the government that are trying to make sure that there are opportunities for non-citizens to vote and to drive cars and to do whatever the hell they want to do to impact the electoral the electorate here at home. You would think that they are ANCAPs and libertarians, but they're not. They are welfare peddlers. They're cultural Marxists. So for them to go up there and say, listen, there's no problem, is absolutely ridiculous.
They look ridiculous to the majority of America. They really do. And, you know, listen, here's the deal. That bill, that disgusting monstrosity of 1,100 whatever pages it was, basically encourages human trafficking, decreases the ability of our law enforcement agencies to do their. It's a bill that is just completely lawless and encourages criminal activity. And this is what the Democrats stand for. This is what the Democrats stand for. They stand for a weak border, illegal immigration, human trafficking, the killing of babies, drug running. Let's stand one of the angel, the poor angel moms. And yeah, no, they want to be there. Those angel moms want to be there. They're not props. These people, trust me, they want to be standing there because their kid was killed because these idiots on Capitol Hill that have a D next to their names think that it's all a big joke and they're just going to bring in a whole new crop of voters and continue to make money off of the illegal drugs that come over the freaking border and the trafficking and everything else. It's disgusting to me. I can't get my head. How do you support that? How do you stand there with a straight face and support that shit? Excuse my French.
Well, not for nothing, but why the hell are they? Why the hell are Senate Republicans even putting this onto Trump's shoulders? Why aren't they killing this bill?
Because they're spineless morons.
So this is what I'm talking about. You know, it always comes down. Here we are. You want to talk about the narrative. You want to talk about what really needs to be restored and what everybody is still. We are all still looking toward, and wrongfully so, looking toward one person. That is not what we were set up to do.
Right. We find ourselves in an unconstitutional constitutional republic. It is completely back-asswards. Everything is nothing. We're basically forced to give the executive, the chief executive, all the power because he can't get safe legislation that will benefit the people of this country to go through the halls of Congress, because the entire damn system is a big joke, okay? At the end of the day, it just is. These people are supposed to be elected to represent us. They don't. They don't.
Mm. Yeah, no, that. So, I mean, we got the national emergency declaration that we knew was coming. He also very appropriately forecasted what is going to be lawsuits and appeals, and hopefully it gets up to the Supreme Court sooner than later. And of course, this comes on the day that apparently The Hill reports that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is back at the Supreme Court, although she is in private conferences back at the Supreme Court.
And a picture or it didn't happen.
Nothing. I have no picture. There's no sketch. There's no video. There's nothing. She's back at private conferences at the court today, Friday. And fine, just show us. Show us.
If this was a justice appointed by the right, and the Supreme Court was in a balance of power in the opposite direction, and there was a Democratic president, and let's talk about precedent in a second, Frank, okay? And there was a Democratic president, and the Supreme Court was about to swing to the left. There would be full court press, protests outside the court, people would be screaming, demanding to see proof of life. But what do we have? We have, you're a conspiracy theorist.
That's not... It's a conspiracy theorist. They just stuck by a Russia hoax for 2 years. They're still not admitting to it.
What planet do we live on?
We live on an awful one. What are you going to want me to say?
I want to talk about precedent, Frank. I want to talk about this whole, oh, he's going to set a bad precedent for the Democrats when they take power. With this,
what's the precedent though? What are the Democrats going to do?
They're basically saying like there was a tweet that came out yesterday from Don Jr. who was replying to this idiot that said like, because he's declaring a national emergency that has been done like 58, 60 times in the past with no fanfare, that all of a sudden he's setting a bad precedent about the constitutional authority of the United States or the president. In other words, like the Democrats who never give a shit about the Constitution all of a sudden care about the Constitution.
But here's the thing. The Constitution mandates the federal government to regulate foreign trade and to set up free trade within the states over here at the Union and defend the United States, its borders and its people. That's pretty much the mandate for national defense and foreign trade regulation. That is the main objective of the federal government. So I don't know. And when you have the Congress, the People's House, and you have the Senate, who are making excuses along with their bought and paid for media, to say that there is no national emergency, that what's going on at the border is not a problem, while at the same time clearly setting up a system that incubates those who come here in droves to break the law. I mean, when you have activist judges, and I brought this up on the show before too, when you have activist judges that try to put some kind of injunction or any kind of an order in place that says you cannot illegal immigrants are able to claim asylum at any point along the border where they are apprehended. That is not a point of entry. What you're saying is that there is no need for a port of entry.
Right.
What you're saying is get here no matter what. We're going to find a way to get you into the population. This is not, it's just a group of people who are standing in direct opposition to everything that the federal government was stood up for. So when your Congress is compromised and they are being propped up by this awful press that you, it's not even press. It's just their party newsletter. What the hell do you have? It's horrible to think about, but once again, this is why we're petitioning for one man to do it. And whereas this is in the sake of national emergency, what on earth could the Democrats possibly use this for in a way that would run parallel to what the Constitution mandates? What would they use this for?
Well, they're basically... Yeah, well, that's exactly right, and that's what I was going to say. The dude that tweeted this from CNN deleted his tweet, so I can't read the original tweet at this point. But he basically said, like, oh, they can use this against guns. The liberals will use this against guns. And I said, there's a big difference. The Second Amendment is a constitutionally protected, God-given right. A national emergency to protect our border enforces the Constitution, not the opposite.
Absolutely. That's why it's bullshit. It's bullshit. For anybody that says... Anybody that says if you're going to do this to protect our country, then we're going to use a national emergency to strip everybody of their Second Amendment rights.
Basically, that's the argument. And the other argument is basically like they could use this. I say basically too much. Someone brought that to my attention the other day. Really is bothering me. How many times I say it in a sentence sometimes. It's like that's like people that say the word essentially too much. Do you ever notice those people?
I notice a lot of things. I probably have tics, too.
They're saying the Green New Deal. They're going to use it to implement the Green New Deal because the climate change is a national emergency.
But see, it just keeps reinforcing the initial argument here. What are they standing for? What are they standing in the way of? What do they say this is going to set the precedent for? And what do they say they're going to use that precedent to go and implement? Everything that they stand for or stand against works against the interests of a sovereign America.
Yep.
Well, everything that they stand for or against works against the interests of a sovereign country. That is the point here.
They don't. That's the thing. And that's why we had a McCabe and a Jim Comey and a John Brennan and a James Clapper and a Barack Obama and a Hillary Clinton and all of the other globalist a-holes plotting the coup of a sitting president who was against everything that they were standing for. And everything that they were standing for was globalism and the complete and utter destruction of America, the last bastion of freedom left on this planet. And they were willing to go to any cost to prevent that from happening and then remove the person who was preventing their plan from moving forward. And somehow he's been able to get around all of that noise. And if he has to declare a national emergency to get the wall built, by goodness, declare the damn national emergency like you did today. Get the wall built. And the rest of these, the problem is, Frank, this wall makes a lot of the other issues moot. Mm-hmm. So I understand where President Trump is coming from. You get this wall up, we can deal with the after effects of what's here in September again and moving on with some sort of comprehensive legislation, hopefully someday. But once that wall goes up, the crossings, the illegal entry goes down almost completely. And what happens then? The Democrats are screwed because they're running out of victim classes and they're running out of voters. They have to continuously create new entitlement classes, create new voters with a booming economy and, people realizing wealth again and people off food stamps in record numbers and people being successful again. They're losing their voting block. They have to create new voters. They can't create new voters. They die politically.
Yeah. Well, hey, think about it. Why? Let's say that there really was a crisis that these people that are coming here by the tens of thousands and every once in a while there is a migrant horde that gets together. They call it a caravan
funded by the left and Soros. Yeah. And
so that every once in a while, every couple of months, the new caravan gets together and of course, it has a nice little hashtag, and everybody talks about it on all the networks. And they spin their way. And what does it really all tell you? Well, they're saying this is all about ports of entry and people who have legitimate claims to asylum. Then, of course, when they get to the Tijuana border, we realize that there are no legitimate claims to asylum. It's mostly military-aged males. The women and children that are there are in the vast minority. and they're being used as human shields. And CBS and MSNBC and CNN, they can't report on it for much longer after that. You see, it's only viable when there's a lot of anxiety that's building as people are marching from Guatemala to the United States. Once they get here and we realize who's actually in the crowd and how their interest and how their asylum claims are really not asylum claims, they're coming here to work. They're not coming here fleeing from anything that's oppressive, and they skipped over multiple countries to be able to do so, which if you're claiming asylum, you have to go to the next viable country, which would be Mexico. And they're denying all of those, most of those offers from Mexico for people to stay there. You know,
they're going back, Frank. Once they realize they can't get in, they're going back. It must have been really horrible for them that they can't wait it out in the camp that they've been held up in with food provided to them and all kinds of medical care and everything else.
Yeah, and it tells you one. It tells you another thing. If they are not eligible to get into the country, most of them, by a port of entry, and you're saying, listen, just these port, a port of entry is not restrictive for somebody who is coming here and they have a legitimate asylum claim. They know that these people are not legitimate asylum seekers. They know that. That's why they're trying to get around. Democrats and progressives in this country are trying to get around ports of entry. Everything that they do tell you this.
Yeah.
They're trying to skirt the law, not make the law more compassionate. We have the most compassionate laws in the world. Nobody's getting around to this. Nobody's getting around to really pointing this out in a meaningful way. And that's, to be honest, I wish – this is what I'm talking about. I wish that instead of this being a little bit more of a free-speaking event today at the White House, it was a little bit more telepromptered and a little bit more organized so that these points
right.
put out there.
Right. So that he said, look at what they're trying to do. Like, look at what's in this bill that they just put on my desk. This is what comes from the left. This is what comes from Pelosi and Schumer. And then go through just what we just went through one by one by one. And when Acosta's challenging him, say one person being killed is an emergency. One American being killed because of illegal immigration is an emergency. What is Acosta going to say? No, it's not. What is he going to say?
He wants to say, no, it's not. The day after they spent however many hours on television memorializing the 1 year anniversary of the Parkland shooting. Remember, whenever there's a shooting anywhere in this country, a country of hundreds of millions of people, whenever somebody gets shot and it is viable enough to be picked up and pumped out by the mainstream media and all the Marxists in the press, what do they say? Not one child. One is too much. We need to strip the entire country of their constitutional rights to self-defense and also to be able to repel any kind of acts of tyranny and whatever the hell it is. They go to war with history itself. They go to war with everything to be able to strip people of the rights they believe they should not have. And then, of course, if you turn that around, you talk about what's going on at the border. And most of this has to do with people who are not even citizens. What they do, the lengths they go to create these narratives at the border is unbelievable, but it's totally believable.
Not only that, but again, to the infanticide bills that they're putting forward everywhere. And there was just another case of an MS-13 gang member in New York who I don't think was able to finish the act, but wanted to kill and rape a 2-year-old. Okay. So, yeah, left. Why don't you champion that? Hold that person up. Not an animal. These are people. These are people, Frank. These are people that are just coming here for a better life. Sick.
Who's more foolish, the fool or the fool who follows the fool?
Oh, Lord.
That's that. You know, these monsters have convinced other people that these are all legitimate arguments and legitimate concerns and... That's that. So once again, I just want to say that my support of the president hasn't wavered. I just wish that every time that you have an opportunity to really stick a knife into these people and give them no place to hide and no place to fall back on intellectually, and they have no places to fall back on. They're so exposed. I just wish that it was better thought out.
And that's another topic all in and of itself, too. How exposed they really are. Look at them. They're a floundering mess right now, Frank, because never did they ever want to be exposed. It wasn't their goal to ever be or have outward facing an Ocasio-Cortez as their champ, like, you know, face. Right. And that's happening. They're completely exposed and vulnerable at this point. There's going to be like 25 of them running for president. What a nonsense show that's going to be. What are they even running on? I mean, I said it yesterday in a video that, or 2 days ago. They're running on what? What are their ideas? I hate Trump. Russia, Russia, Russia. Let's let illegal immigrants vote. Let's expand the welfare state. Let's raise taxes on the middle class. Let's kill everybody's babies. Let's take away your right to defend yourself. I mean, that's literally their platform.
Yeah.
We'll dictate to you what health insurance you can have.
And everything else and all other. It's almost as if they're trying to create a new union. Of course, first of all, they want to get rid of the states. They want to get rid of any kind of sovereignty that the individual states have and create federal. There is federal supremacy now. That's just where we're at. But they want to solidify that and make that, you know, immovable for all time. And then from that point, once you have molded everybody into the block that they're trying to do over here, then they want to turn the whole country into a state of a global union. And that's exactly what's going on here. You get rid of thinking and acting locally over here on a national level. Then you turn the entire nation into a state of whatever they're doing internationally. And we know where they want to go. We've seen really weird overtures with the Green New Deal. We know about the Paris Accord, how this really just destroys national sovereignty in many ways, economic sovereignty. And I mean, even the Pope is making overtures with these interfaith compacts and all that stuff. It's like faith and country and economy and all this stuff is being molded and layered on top of each other, and it's getting a little bit too stuffy for me, Tracy.
But the precedent you'll set.
I'm ready for the bulldozers to come in.
So let's move from there and let's start talking about the active coup that was being plotted from inside of the Justice Department of the United States of America.
Yeah.
So we've got Andrew McCabe trotting himself out in front of the press now for the first time in a long time. And many people are wondering, like, what is he doing? Is he coming out because he's trying to sell a book? Or is he coming out because he's about to get his ass indicted? I wonder. I don't know.
I think both. I think the book is actually going to help him with his legal fees.
I mean, he's under grand jury in investigation right now. There's an active grand jury active. That's double positives or whatever. But yeah, so he's being looked at right now and everyone's like, well, where's the indictment? And I agree. Let's get this gentleman in handcuffs already. Let's storm his house with stormtroopers and aquatic vessels. And, you know, let's have Fox News there an hour before to make sure we get it all on camera. And then we can. You know, talk about his credibility after that, because he's been charged with lying on several occasions. And he literally admitted in an interview with 60 Minutes that he was in a room with other people counting heads to see how many people he could get to agree with him to use the 25th Amendment against a sitting president who didn't fit the criteria for the use of the 25th Amendment.
Yep.
This really happened.
Yeah.
What the hell is happening to this country?
Listen, I'll tell you something. And the fact that he's out there promoting the book, it just goes to show they all know the same thing. I mean, how many people that were involved in this coup have now have books out? It's all they know how important in this phase of our republic the court of public opinion is. There are many millions that are never going to care what you can prove or disprove about Russia and what you can prove anywhere else. This is a public play. They know what's going on. They know how stupid they've left people. And this is what I'm just observing this. And I now know, and I've come to this realization and for a couple of weeks now, that there is no, all right, How can we do this in a nice, peaceful way? You know, how can we ease into this? How can we show people, wow, maybe there's going to be an awakening for some people. We can't be polite anymore. The other side's not being polite. They're not going to let down. They can't let down because it means the ends of their lives, not their careers, their lives. And the hammer just has to fall.
And I think it's going to. I still think it's going to. No. And you know, the other thing is too, I said, like, what's happening in this country? What's happening in this country is sunlight. That's what's happening in this country. Because this crap has been going on for a really damn long time under the guise of darkness. And it hurts right now because as you get rid of that toxic stench, it's going to be painful to see exactly what has been going on behind your back the entire time. But you can't fix it unless you see it. And these people have been forced into the sunlight. And that in and of itself is a good thing.
I'm with you. It doesn't take away the anger, but I'm with you.
Rod Rosenstein, that dude, you know, the deputy attorney general who's supposed to be leaving right in a couple days. Now that we've got Bill Barr in as our AG, let's see what he does. I'm hoping for the best, you know, who knows? I don't really know what he's going to do. But do you think that his side of the story is true, that he was just joking around saying, what do you want me to do, wear a wire? Or do you think that the McCabe version of the story is true?
I don't know. Where McCabe says that he was serious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you think at this point? Do you think, because now I'm trying to think about this. I'm trying to think about the forces at play. And now that you really see who is going to try to save their, because it's just skin saving time at this point. So I started going back to all the theories about what color hat people are wearing. And the theories about Rod Rosenstein and Mueller, and not to say that their pasts are clean. They have they're squeaky clean and their hands are not dirty. But as far as what they might have been recruited to do now to perhaps save their ass in the oncoming months and years, I'm trying to think here now. Is this overture by McCabe to throw Rosenstein under the bus, is that in some sort of an admission that he knows that Rosenstein got a deal that he wish he had, if he's staring doom in the face right now, perhaps he's trying to take down people that he's a little annoyed got an out that he never had. I don't know.
No, I mean, that's a good theory. I think a lot of it too has to do with leverage, right? And removing leverage from people and like holding things to yourself. And, you know, it's interesting to me how it all happened. Like, he had testified just days previously that he didn't think that there was any obstruction of justice. Then all of a sudden, Rosenstein writes the memo to fire Comey, right? He writes the memo to fire Comey. Comey gets fired. And he testifies that there's no obstruction. And then all of a sudden, there's this big obstruction of justice investigation that begins, apparently, and they talk about the 25th Amendment. And in between all of that, what happens? We learned from Jeff Carlson's reporting a few months ago that McCabe was, McCabe was completely thrown for a loop when the special counsel was appointed. Everything was removed from McCabe's control when the special counsel was appointed by Rod Rosenstein, and he did not tell McCabe that was going to happen. And if you think back, there was that meeting between Rosenstein and Mueller and Trump, which we still to this day don't know what was said at that meeting the day before he was appointed special counsel. And Jeff Carlson still muses like he does not believe, nor do I. I do not believe at all that this meeting was because he was going to be FBI director. It was too impossible. He had already gotten a special act of Congress to become FBI director again for two more additional years after 9/11. Like, it was an act of Congress to extend that. After Hoover, they wanted to make sure that never happened again.
Yeah.
It's not tenure we're learning. It's not tenure that does it.
My oh my.
So Jeff has this article out and it kind of goes through a timeline, Frank, of like what happened between, it's like the 8 days or 9 days. 9 days in May, the quiet struggle between Rosenstein and McCabe. And Comey's fired on May 9th. 2 days later, McCabe testifies before the Senate Intelligence Committee. The hearing's original intent was to focus on national security threats, but Comey's firing substantially altered the topic of the hearings. He issued a passionate defense of Comey and agreed that he would notify the committee of any effort to interfere with the FBI's ongoing investigation into links between Russia and Trump. McCabe also noted there had been no effort to impede the investigation to date. In other words, McCabe testified that he saw no evidence of obstruction from President Trump or his administration, but he failed to inform the committee he was actively considering opening an obstruction of justice probe into President Trump, a matter he would aggressively push in a meeting with Rosenstein just 5 days later. So did he lie to Congress again?
Like I said before, I'm just happy that there are people out there who have been preparing, meticulously preparing for the depositions and have been meticulously preparing the timelines and the contradictions and have preparing the line of questioning that needs to be asked. I'm so happy that somebody out there or many people out there have been putting the time in with pinpoint precision as to how this needs to be taken apart, because it is such a rat's nest. And let me just say also, on the tail end of that, it is not good enough just to make these people pay. It is not good enough to try to tweak the system and make little adjustments here and there, tighten a few loose ends. It is porous. The system is porous, and it is so open for infection. It is unbelievable. It's got to be pared down. It's got to be pared down.
Yeah, the ever-growing bureaucracy is not helping at all.
Not at all. Not at all.
The penchant for fraud, abuse. Look, the judge. I said the other day I did a video and I was trying to say the word judicial. Mm-hmm. If you try to say that really fast, it comes out funny. Like judicial, right?
Judicial, judicial, judicial.
All right, screw you and say nuclear.
Nuclear, new clear. I think about it. It's two words for me now. N-E-W-C-L-E-A-R, new clear.
So it sounds like the Dana. Did you ever hear the Chopping Broccoli special from Dana Carvey where he does the O.J. Simpson skit?
No.
You didn't?
I probably have, but I don't remember it.
He does like this whole hysterical skit about O.J. Simpson and the O.J. Simpson trial. And I don't even remember what my point was going to be. I'm just going to finish this story and hope that everybody else forgets too. It was basically like F. Lee Bailey going, Mr. Fung, on the day that you wore or that you found the buddy glove, did you shampoo your hair? Because he was all serious and stuff. And then he tries to say the word judicial and he's like, judicial system. You have to listen.
Is this recent or are we going back to the 90s?
This is in the 90s and it is the best special he's ever had. It is so.
It's off SNL. It's not SNL.
No, it's an hour comedy special where the Chopping Broccoli song features prominently.
Okay, so maybe I haven't seen it then. If it was an SNL bit, I definitely have seen it. But maybe I'd have to go watch this.
I'm going to send it to you because he even does like a Bill Clinton impression in the middle of it. And like he kind of makes the case that around the world there were like claims that they were framing O.J. Or framing O.J. You'll hear it. Everybody out there who's heard it already knows what I'm talking about. The people that don't think I'm an idiot and they will listen to it and laugh their asses off, I got to tell you.
I haven't seen it, Tracy. I don't think you're an idiot.
Thank you. That was nice.
You're welcome.
Okay, I wanted to read one other paragraph from this that's really interesting to me from Jeff's article. McCabe's testimony. During McCabe's testimony on May 11th, an unusual and underreported event took place approximately 2 hours into the hearing. The chair and co-chairs of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Richard Burr and Mark Warner, those two names should ring a bell, abruptly excused themselves from the hearing to attend a meeting with Rosenstein in an adjoining sensitive compartmented information facility, or SCIF. And Burr says this, before I turn to Senator Cotton, can I say for the members, the vice chair and I have to step out for a meeting that we can't push off. Present at the meeting were four individuals: Rosenstein, Burr, Warner, and then acting director of the DOJ's National Security Division, Dana Bonte, who is now the FBI's general counsel. He was personally appointed by Trump as acting attorney general after Sally Yates was fired on January 30th, 2017. He also signed the second renewal of the Carter Page FISA application on April 7th, 2017. Rosenstein would sign the third and final FISA renewal on June 29th, 2017. Worth asking, what was so pressing that it required the chair and co-chair of the Senate committee to suddenly depart from the hearing's proceedings? NPR reported that, quote, the meeting had been requested prior to Comey's dismissal and that it was to set up a process for deconfliction between the FBI investigation into Russia and the Intelligence Committee's own independent probe. This explanation appears somewhat inadequate given that the hearing on national security had also been planned prior to Comey's dismissal. It's not known with any certainty what was discussed, but Rosenstein and Bonte felt the meeting was urgent enough to hold it in the midst of McCabe's testimony.
Hey, you know what? With all being said, all said and done, these are fantastic developments.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, all said and done, these are fantastic developments, and things are only getting ramped up, and I'm getting excited. The only reason why I'm at all frustrated today. It's just because I would have liked this address. Oh, was that in the Rose Garden?
Yes.
I would have liked this Rose Garden address to be a little bit more articulate and a little bit more cutting. And it just seemed to have missed the mark in a couple of ways. And I think it could have been a lot more concise. I think he could have been done with the address in 5 minutes and then gone right to questions from everybody and then ripped them apart the way that he's known to rip apart the press, and that would have been the comedy end of things. That's the only source of my frustration today, because as you're putting out there right now, there's an unbelievable amount of information that is there for anybody who is willing to grasp the real reality of things, and that is that everything that we've been told to see or be worried about with the president is nonsense, and that those who have been spinning the narrative really were at the helm of one of the greatest string of crimes in this country's history. And I think that is a great thing, for as much as it is a depressing thing. So you got to start somewhere.
No, I agree with you. And the reason why I'm so frustrated today is not because really of Donald Trump at all. I agree with you 100%. I think that address was messed up. It not messed up like, oh my God, that was so messed up. Like messed up like, whoops. That's what I think happened there. But the crux of the matter is the security of the country and these idiot, sorry to say, the idiot left who just can't get their heads out of their own butts to understand what their party is doing to this nation. That infuriates the heck out of me. I have to tell you, though, what you're saying is absolutely true. And we're seeing the implosion all over the place. For example, Frank, did you happen to see what happened to me over the past 2 days by chance?
No, with what?
I did a video. So there's Seth Abramson. He is a left. He's an attorney and a professor who wrote a book about Spygate from the position that Trump is guilty of collusion with Russia.
What a waste of paper. Why anybody would do... Oh,
okay. God,
waste. Let's say he was. Why would you ever write that book that now?
No, he was writing the book to prove it because you can't prove it. Do you understand? Like, he knows that... I think at the end of the day, he's got to know deep down inside somewhere down in that empty soul of his that they're not going to prove that there was any collusion. So he has to do the work for them. Right. So listen,
he should have just made a comic book.
He has 600,000 followers on Twitter. Okay. And he peddles disinformation on a daily basis. He like will say the sky is red and people will just believe him because he said it. Like there's never any sourcing or any, he makes things illegal that aren't illegal. And in the past, I've taken the opportunity to deconstruct his threads on my YouTube channel with actual hard data and showing why what he's saying is a lie. And like, I've taken the time to do that. The other day he lost his marbles about the the NBC report that said that Burr said that there was no evidence of collusion. He excoriated the media for saying something that wasn't true. That's not what Burr said, he says. Burr didn't say that. He said there's no direct evidence.
Right. Because, of course, in a criminal trial, everybody needs to go out there and find indirect evidence and innuendo to convict somebody.
Listen, he's a lawyer, Frank, okay? So he knows more than you, all right? He knows way more than you and way more than me. And
you don't need to be a lawyer to understand vocabulary.
No. You do to understand his vocabulary because he's one of those people that overcomplicates every sentence with massive words that don't make sense together. He's also one of those people that puts stars around words instead of quotes.
Right. Right.
You know,
you have to. Well, I'll put it to you this way. People out there who make simple things complicated, they are controllers. You have to be very, very careful with these people. Anybody who talks in maths is just where you need to be, you know, fluent in calculus to have a conversation with somebody about something that should be as easy as I don't know what. It's unbelievable.
So I took to my YouTube channel and I took his threads that he did. He said that the news was putting out domestic disinformation, which I said, yes, I agree. The news and you are putting out domestic disinformation on a daily basis. It was really funny. I did like 15 minutes on him, right? And then I went on to other things. Well, what do you know? I wake up the next day and there's a 30-tweet thread about me on his page.
Wow.
30.
How many followers did you get?
Oh, gosh. I picked up about 400.
Good for you.
Dead serious. Not even joking. And there's a 30-tweet thread about me. And of course, Frank, I'm a racist.
Yes, yes.
And of course, I'm libeling him.
Yes, you are. Yes. What else have you done? Have you sexually assaulted him as well?
You couldn't get me to go near that man with someone else's.
I don't believe it. You sexually assaulted him.
Me too. This was one time where I was actually like, yes, slow golf clap. Yes. And like, I feel like my comment section got like overwhelmed with all of his like minions. But I really in the video talked about a lot of concepts and conservative ideas and reasons why things were stupid. And I was like very clear about those things. And I'm wondering how many converts I got.
There's definitely of those 400 people alone. There's definitely a few of them that say, hey. There's some merit here.
I'm going to look right now and see if I pick how many subscribers I picked up on YouTube that day. What day was it? It wasn't yesterday. It was the day before. 121.
Okay.
121 as compared to typically. That's not true. Yeah, it was more than the past couple days were. That was on YouTube.
Well, it's all right. On YouTube, I pick up maybe about 5 subscribers a month. So that's
Frank, we've gone over this so many times.
I know. It's just my format.
It is. It is your format. Oh, and on Twitter, yeah, 209. Yeah, between a couple hundred. Yep.
Well, keep bringing it right to their front door, Tracy.
I'm going to.
You're doing it for all of us.
Yeah, it was nice to be attacked by someone from the left for once instead of someone for the right. It was actually a badge of honor. I'm like, wow, I don't have to feel bad about going back after them. When the people on the right attack me, I feel bad going after them.
It's like, come on, man. Couldn't you have reached out to me in private?
Yeah, or just shut up. Like, you know, there are a lot of people that I dislike. I will not go out and start a big war. It's ridiculous. For goodness sakes. Did you hear Brandon speaking on the main stage at CPAC?
No, I haven't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He got invited. He's speaking on the main stage at CPAC.
So then he must be gearing up. He's definitely going to bring it to the House of Representatives race in 2020 then. I really hope he does.
They might redistrict that out.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just got to tell you, though. I got to tell you, listen, conservative CPAC, conservative union, take note, okay? Because his announcement got like 3 times the Jordan and Meadows are going to be there. Yay. I have a very special spot at CPAC where I'm going to be able to get these interviews with these people. I'm going to be able to get them and sit with them and interview them. Guaranteed. So
you're going to be going up to Washington, D.C. again then?
Yeah, I'm going up to D.C. on the 27th, and I'm going to be there the entire time, and I'm in the process of getting all the equipment to turn my iPhone into a roving broadcast studio.
Do you drive still mostly, or are you racking up some frequent flyer miles now?
No, I'm driving. Okay. Listen, I've got 6 days there, and I need to be able to bring my clothes with me.
Okay.
And like my, you know, equipment and stuff, and I'm not
drunk.
Yeah. Baggage fees. Anyway, Brandon has like 3 times as many retweets on his announcements than anyone else does.
Well, I'm rooting for him. I really am.
Diamond and Silk, David Webb. It's going to be a good conference.
David Webb is fantastic. I love
him. Mm-hmm. Coda Vets will be there. That's great.
That's a guy I would love to hang out with. He and Andrew Wilkow. Wilkow is fantastic. Was Wilkow going to be there?
I don't know. I don't see him.
What about Mark Levin?
Usually. Mike Lee will be there. I'm looking down here. Mike Lee, Barry Loudermilk. I don't know who that is. Gene Pirro, Charlie Kirk, and Candace Owens, Roger Williams. I'm just going through this because it's exciting. I don't think POTUS will be there because he'll be over in China. You know what I want to see on this list? Tracy Beans.
You should bring it to him, Tracy.
No, for real. I want to speak at CPAC because I think I am with a bunch of people in this country that don't get represented as often as they should. Really, like all the normal people, not the elites.
I think about that sometimes because I really do have a desire to speak more to classrooms, and I'd love to get in front of younger students and stuff, and maybe challenge them in little ways, not necessarily history, but a little bit more on the way that the brain works and how, you know, what reality is and concepts of very basic concepts of freedom, things that won't necessarily trigger them on political levels, because once you start considering things like that, I think the politics of it all really starts falling into place, and you see where people are just, you know, holed up and in very unhealthy patterns of thought and all that stuff. But when I try to think about getting up in front of, you know, thousands of people at a place like CPAC, I always wonder, what the hell would I even talk about? I don't know.
You do it like you do on your show every day.
I guess, but it's a
different... You know, I really wish you were going to be there because, like, if we were just sitting at the broadcast desk together all day, like, grabbing these interviews, like, that would be so great. Nigel Farage is going to be there. Dennis Prager will be there. James O'Keefe will be there. Charlie Kirk, Cassie Dillon. I want to get... Like, wouldn't you love to just interview some of these people?
I would love to, absolutely. That would be a little bit more easy to prepare for, because there would definitely be, I think that sitting there, I should have about 3 set questions I'd want to know. I'd want to ask everybody, maybe just, you know, conversation starters, things that are relevant, things that will really get the guest thinking. Because, of course, I'd have to imagine that being in a conference like that, you'd be coming across so many people you wouldn't even expect to have the chance to have shaken their hands,
yeah,
or prepare for a conversation. That, like, I think about, like, for example, when I bumped into Owen Schroyer at Walkaway, mm-hmm, there's probably tons of things I could ask him, but I refrain, I give him a handshake, and I walk away because I don't want to sit there like a stammering fool, looking like I'm, you know, like I'm fangirling.
I know.
It's like, okay, come up with something relevant to ask him that doesn't, you know, it's just...
I feel the same way as you. I don't do that either. Like, if I have the opportunity to meet, like, okay, Sarah Sanders. I was sharing the same space with her for 2 hours, and I had literally no desire to intrude upon her said space, which was 5 feet away from me, other than to be like, hey, can I snap a quick photo with you? Great. Now enjoy your evening. Kick back, have a drink, and relax. You work your ass off all day. I'm not going to badger you with, so what's it like? You know what I mean? Yeah. And why is Rick Santorum going to CPAC?
I don't know.
Oh, he's horrible.
I don't know. He should become a Twitch gamer.
Oh,
he
sorry.
He should just start hanging out on Twitch and play video games.
Oh, my gosh. They would love his last name. They would love it. Do you ever look at what his last name means?
What?
Google it.
Santorum?
Mm-hmm.
Santorum. Dictionary?
No.
Santorum.
Say Santorum definition.
Santorum definition. Let's see here. Urban Dictionary? Oh my God. Can I read it on air?
I don't know.
Hold on, let me see here. Oh, no. I can't read this on air. I'll read it on my show.
We figured that out when he was running against Ron Paul.
Oh, God.
Yeah, you guys can figure that out at home. Sarah Carter will be there. That'll be a great conversation.
Indeed. Sarah Carter. I'd love to talk to her.
In more ways than one, right, Frank?
I'd like to have a whiskey with her.
You know, I finished watching Daredevil. That was great. It ended great. And then I started again last night with The Punisher. What is the drink that they're always drinking in those little glasses that, like, they only pour, like, two sips of it in there and then they just sit? Is it bourbon? Is it, like, a Kyle thing?
I don't know. I have no clue. Daredevil, it's funny you bring that up because I was talking about that with Lauren last night, that we have to watch Daredevil because for any other reason for she and I, it is that because we watched Punisher. We're halfway through the second season of Punisher, and we know that he gets his, you know, Frank Castle in this reimagining of the Punisher series, because I, you know, from all my friends who are comic book fans and fans of the Punisher, I know that he is originally a Vietnam veteran. And of course, they modernized it to make him an Iraq or Afghanistan veteran, and they modified things to that point. But I know that he made his debut on the Daredevil series. And I want to be able to see at least the origin of that character.
Yeah. Super interesting how he gets. It's really cool. And did you know that whole series, even the one with Elektra in it, they're meant to be watched in a certain order? Like the first two episodes of this one, then that one, then the next, and they all fit together. Did you know that?
I did not know any of this. Did you watch the first season of Punisher?
Yes.
I thought that was just so profound that, you know, and I know that we talk about this all the time, that Hollywood and the media and entertainment, there's a lot of things that go on there. There are people that want to tell stories and avoid consequences. There are people out there who want to tell stories for the idea, for the value of having that karmic payback where you're balanced out. You're balancing out the deceptions that you're running every day. So you have to tell some kind of a truth to balance it out somewhere. And if people can't pick it up in plain sight, it's their own fault. Mm. But I'll tell you, that was amazing just to see all that play out in the Afghanistan special ops, black ops portion of the Punisher series, especially with the whole idea that they brought up once again, the opium trade coming out of Afghanistan.
Yep.
Sending home drugs in you know, American cadavers, to be honest.
I mean, we know that happens.
Oh, yeah. We know it happens. We know that the Afghan war in Afghanistan is not the first time that was happening.
No.
We know. I think that there was actually happening in Vietnam. They're talking about sending things home in coffins.
So gross. Yeah, that show was really, really, really good, The Punisher. And the premise behind The Punisher is really, really good, too. And you figure out why what's-her-name, the reporter, I forget her name, I can't believe it, from Daredevil is in The Punisher.
Hmm.
Really good, really good, really good.
Hey, is there anything else that you wanted to do, as far as big topics?
No, we're done. I'm just winding down at this point. I'm glad I'm simmered down a little bit.
Yeah.
We're done.
I am too. You see, last night I had the Valentine's Day episode with Lauren. So we just took calls. It wasn't like a Hallmark holiday broadcast. I just brought her on and it gave us an opportunity to talk music, you know, love songs and greatest love songs of all time. So everybody had a really good time, suggesting music and, we had a fun time taking calls and all that stuff. But tonight, because last night was pretty much like a Friday, tonight I gotta dive into the weeds. There's a lot of stuff I want to do. Now there's things that are popping off. This McCabe story is one of them I want to talk about. Definitely have to mention something about the president in the Rose Garden today. The spending bill that was put on his desk and certain loopholes and landmines as they're being called, that might be in here that are just a little too uncomfortable to ignore. And then, hey, I've been pretty intrigued by these Q posts the last couple of days too. I still keep up with those things, just as you would keep up with a favorite blog of yours. And I'll tell you, there's a lot here. There's a lot here I want to talk about, a lot of questions I want to pose. I'm glad that we were able to do the bigger ones today with McCabe, because all of this stuff that's going out, and I don't know, and in this Ruth Bader Ginsburg thing, so much stuff.
Well,
so much stuff to do.
I'm going to be excited to listen to your show tomorrow, because tonight is Helga's contest. Helga last week was in the American Idol contest for her school. And she won entrance to the next round, which is this evening. And it's going to be about a 4-hour long production for 3 minutes of her performance. So from 5 to 9, I will be sitting in a school auditorium hoping that Helga takes home the gold. Tomorrow night, before we go, I am doing Chopped at the American Legion.
What, salad?
No, the show. Like, oh. You know how they have the show Chopped? I think it's called Chopped.
Okay, we have a salad bar around here. It's a franchise. It's called Chopped.
Maybe I got the name of the show wrong.
No, it might be it.
Well, basically, it's a team, and you get this basket of ingredients, and you have to make something out of that basket of ingredients, and then you get judged by a judge, and they do this as a fundraiser at the Legion Hall, and me and my dad are a team. You know, our name is Frank and Beans, because his name is Frank too.
See, this is all good.
Yeah, so I'm glad I got all this nastiness out of my system this morning.
Don't worry, I'll rage. I'll rage for us both again tonight.
Listen, everyone, thank you so much for listening to the Dark to Light podcast with...
Frank. And I'm sorry for the flat tire of a name. It's only one syllable. It's just this flat tire. Frank.
Hey, Frank.
Sorry.
And beans.
I had a great time with you, Tracy, and I'm glad that we're back to our old good audio.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys can catch this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, RadioInfluence.com, or you can even find a link to it on my website at TracyBeans.com. And what's your website, Frank? Just tell everyone before we kick it off.
Everything you need to know about me is on quitefranklypodcast.com.
Off we go. Have a fantastic weekend. We'll see you soon.
Night.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.